You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into The Frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Hello and welcome again to the Turley Frequency, here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Today on the show we meet Dale Lash, who is the Assistant Managing Editor at Lanyap, and he will be telling us all about the latest news and views in the Mobile Fairhope area. Dale joins us in the next segment. Top of the hour, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are invited to join us. Feel free to text us your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. The lines are open right now. In the final segment today, we continue to examine the life of Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster, the nun who has returned from the grave, quite literally, and is hitting the headlines. Stick around till the last segment to find out more. Okay, with all that good stuff, let's get this show on the road. Welcome to the Turley Frequency. My name is Kevin Turley, and I'm your host for the next 2 hours here on Archangel Radio. They say pride comes before a fall, but in the radio world, the fall comes when you don't hit the button which sets your mic on live. So apologies for our double entry start, but it's a very good way of introducing the theme of today, which is all about humility. Do you remember some weeks ago I said that the themes that populate this show seem to come from, well, they don't come from me, they come from other sources. And if you remember on Monday, we had the talk radio legend on our show, Mike Church, and we were talking about presidential contenders. And he took us through the runners and the riders, Democrat and Republican. And some of them, let's be honest, are no hopers, right? They've got no chance of ever getting into the White House. So I asked Mike, I said, well, why do they do it? Why do they put themselves through it, put their families through it? And Mike shot straight back, pride and vanity, pride and vanity. And it's true, pride and vanity is something which is more in prevalence than we would like to imagine. In fact, I was just looking at the front pages of newspapers today in preparation for the show. I started looking at them through the lens of pride and vanity. And I have to say that most of the stories, most of the bad stories, most of the troubling stories, most of the contentious stories are all about pride and vanity. It seems to be everywhere. So this is the theme that's emerging this week. And is it any coincidence that it emerges at the start of June? Now, June is a month which has been hijacked and the label pride put upon it. I'm not going to go into all that debate today anyway, but you know what I'm talking about. It's called Pride Month by some people. Pride is the deadliest of all sins. All the theologians down the centuries have said that pride is the greatest of all the sins. We need to be careful about pride. If you remember, Mike, on Monday was talking about humility, Humility Month. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But as this month rolls on, I'm starting to think pride and vanity is all around us, in all sorts of guises, not just in the more obvious ones. And nowhere more so, maybe perhaps, than today in London. the newspapers, the news feeds here anyway, and I think as well in the United States to some extent, are saturated with Prince Harry. Prince Harry has flown back from California to London to go into court. And this is a very, very unusual occurrence for a whole host of reasons. For the first time, I think he is in a court giving evidence. But this is not something that British royals tend to do. The previous incidents of this were in the late 19th century, when the future King Edward had to go to court over various gambling charges and adultery charges and brought great scandal to the British royal family. Since then, the British royals, wisely, in my opinion, have stayed well clear of courts. Never good places to be for all sorts of reasons, not least the resultant publicity. But before I say anything more, let's just have a little listen in case you haven't caught up on this and you're wondering, well, what's Prince Harry doing in court? First of all, it's a civil court, okay? It's not a criminal court that he's appearing in. Reid, if we've got audio file one ready, this will give a very succinct little summary as to why Prince Harry has suddenly appeared in a British court.
Sure, Kevin, let's play it.
Phone hacked. That is one of the key questions they have to answer in the court behind me. He is the first senior member of the British royal family in modern times to appear in court and be cross-examined. He's accusing Mirror Group newspapers, they're the owners of the Daily Mirror, the Sunday Mirror and the Sunday People, of phone hacking by voicemail interception and of using private investigators to dig into his personal life. He said it began when he was a child, around the time that his mother, Princess Diana, died. He claims the stories that kept coming out about his private life made him paranoid and ruined his relationships. Prince Harry is the best known of the four people suing MGN. They all claim senior executives at the papers knew what was going on. MGN says they are wrong and it's a smear, and that when it comes to Prince Harry, the articles came from legal sources. Now, they have previously admitted that phone hacking did take place at the papers and have paid out £100 million in damages and costs. But they say there is no evidence of any hacking in any of the cases being heard here. Prince Harry says he's making reform of the tabloid press his life's work. And he's also bringing cases against the owners of the Mail and the Sun over phone hacking, which they deny.
Okay, so there you have it. Nice little succinct summary from the BBC. Prince Harry is making the reform of the tabloid press his sort of life crusade. What he's doing is making lots and lots of news headlines in the tabloid press and elsewhere because they're having a field day. They're loving it. Outside the court here in London, there is an absolute bank either side of the entrance to the court of photographers and journalists snapping and catching every single moment of his arrival and soon departure from the court. Inside, they have lots of journalists who are noting his every single word. There's even people that are sketching. You're not allowed to take photographs in British courts, so there's people sketching his sort of appearance in court in front of the barrister. That's the lawyer who's questioning him. And by all accounts, is hauling him over the coals, is finding lots of inconsistencies in what Prince Harry is alleging. Now, you might say, well, what has this got to do with anybody? Well, it's got a lot to do with Prince Harry in the sense that if he loses this case, and there's absolutely no certainty that he will win it, he is up against a very, very powerful media entity. And if he loses it, it will cost him many, many millions of pounds, many millions of dollars in court fees, at the very, very least. To say nothing of the reputational damage that bringing a case alleging X, Y, and Z and then having no proof of any sort to corroborate what he's saying in court. It's what's known as not just a financial disaster, but a public relations disaster. And that is the whole point of what he's trying to do. Let's be honest, his claim to reform the tabloids is complete and utter nonsense. They are not going to be reformed, and they're certainly not going to be reformed by a British prince. Now, Prince Harry thinks he's on some sort of crusade where he's got some sort of moral high ground. Let me play you another clip, which came from this morning from a talk radio show here in London. And I think that it very succinctly sums up the view of probably not just all the journalists here in the UK, but probably most of the population. Reid, if we can play audio file two.
Just a moment, Kevin. We're getting that pulled up for you right this instant.
Okay, well, we are. This is taken from the talk radio news channel here. It's a radio station, and the person who does the breakfast show is somebody called Julia Hartley Brewer. And she, as you will hear, does not hold back when she has strong opinions, and she has very strong opinions about Prince Harry. But
yes, ready now, Kevin.
Okay, let's hear this.
Dominating news, dominating front pages today in the courts, not just of public opinion anymore, in the court, in the High Court. He's been facing a grilling in the witness box, first of 2 days of grilling by the barrister for Mirror Group newspapers in the phone hacking trial. This trial involves the claims that 33 different articles written over many, many years ago, dating all the way back to Prince Harry's childhood, were basically in the news and in the public domain as a result of illegal activity, whether it was phone hacking, blagging, people pretending to be someone they weren't to get information, or other nefarious means. Well, so far, he's certainly kept his cool, but has he actually gone any way to prove his case? He's been, lashing out at everyone he can, whether it is the government, he says it's a rock-bottom government, whether it's the media in general, whether it's, the whole of Britain, it seems to me. But there's no doubt at all. He claims that the media, the tabloid press in particular, is responsible for pretty much every woe in his life. There is no relationship, whether with his family, or whether with his girlfriends, his friends, everyone he went to school with, everyone he's ever worked with, that has not been destroyed by the media. By every little tidbit of his personal life ending up on the front pages, he says this has destroyed him, made him paranoid, cut his circle of friends, and broken down long-term relationships. And we'd all have a lot of sympathy for that if it wasn't for the fact that this is a man who's quite happy to give away his own private information, a man who is quite happy to sell his own private information, a man who is happy to put the video of him proposing to his wife in one of the most intimate moments of his life onto Netflix. Well, to the tune of many, many tens of millions of pounds in fees. Is this a man we can take seriously, saying that the intrusions into his privacy have damaged him when he intrudes into his own privacy all the time? Except he doesn't like it when a newspaper does it, but he's perfectly happy to do it when it's a journalist he's chosen, or when it's a talk show host like Oprah Winfrey, or when it's Netflix paying him large sums of money, or when it's his own book Spare and you're able to buy a copy. So it seems to me that his life is private, except when he is being paid to make it not private. Love to know where your thoughts lie. Do you get in touch?
Okay, thank you, Reid. There you have it. That is the reaction, in a nutshell, of many, many commentators this side of the Atlantic this morning. Now, remember, my question to Prince Harry would be, so, Prince Harry, how is that reform of the tabloid press, the media in general, how's it going? It seems to be going in the wrong direction, Harry. It really does. So anyway, let's leave Prince Harry in the dock answering questions as I speak here in London. And let's think about it again in the context of the themes which are emerging this week on the show, which is around pride and humility. You see, pride and humility are often linked together. They are, if you like, the opposites of each other. You can't be humble and be proud. You can't be proud and be humble. Now, we need to qualify a little bit about what it means to be humble and what it means to be proud. And I'm not going to take time doing that this morning. We can maybe do it later in the week. But let's look at what the Bible says about this, because if Prince Harry had picked up his copy of the King James Bible, which his great ancestor had produced for all those Protestant Christians many, many centuries ago, he would have read the following in the book of Proverbs, chapter 11, verse 2. When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. This is one of the things, certainly in the book of Proverbs, that it's a very sort of Hebrew way in which they discourse, which is they say on the one hand and then on the other hand. And what we're getting here is wisdom from the divine, from the Holy Scriptures, about pride and humility. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. Well, Prince Harry, I'm afraid, pride probably drove you to the courtroom. It was one of the factors, maybe not the only factor, but certainly one of them. And with it may come disgrace. Humility comes wisdom. But Proverbs has other things to say. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 12. Before his downfall, a man's heart is proud. But humility comes before honor. You can see a theme arising here, can't you? Humility is a good place to be. Humility will bring wisdom. It will bring honor. And what does pride bring? Disgrace and a downfall. Proverbs 22, verse 4. Humility and fear of the Lord bring wealth and honor and life. So, humility is not being some sort of doormat that is forgotten about and left behind. It's actually, according to the scriptures, a very good strategy on which to fulfill one's potential in life. Because wisdom will tell you where you should be, and humility will bring you the honors that your gifts require or deserve. So let's remember that humility and fear of the Lord bring wealth, honor, and life. So pride and vanity, they bring the opposite, right? They bring poverty, dishonor, and a life that you wouldn't want to live. Let's hope and pray that Prince Harry doesn't end up really understanding this biblical verse in the worst sense in the coming days here in London. We can keep an eye on it. Now, Mother Teresa, we were talking about yesterday, St. Teresa of Calcutta, she had plenty to say about humility, and she was a wonderful woman. She was so popular and so well known and so well thought of, yet she was so full of humility. And this is what she had to say about humility in this month of the Sacred Heart. Learn to be humble by doing all the humble work and doing it for Jesus. You cannot learn humility from books. You learn it by accepting humiliations. And humiliations are not meant to torture us. They are gifts from God. These little humiliations, if we accept them with joy, will help us to be holy, to have a meek and humble heart like Jesus. So when I fail to hit the mute button at the start of the show, that is a little gift from God. It is a little humiliation, which I accept with great joy in this month of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Okay, when we come back, we will be talking all things Alabaman with Dale Lash, who is from Lanyap. You're not going to want to miss this. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here on Archangel Radio. Welcome back to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It's so good to have your company this Wednesday morning. I hope it is going well wherever you are, at home, at work, in hospital, at school, on the road, wherever you are, I hope it's going well. Now, for those of us not from the great state of Alabama, there is an air of mystery about where you live. That's right. The name Alabama is, of course, known to us through history and song, movies and novels. But as we all know, that is not the same thing as really understanding a place or the people that live there. In my case, this is doubly so. I visit Alabama every day here on the radio, but I would be the first to admit that I am still getting to know about you and your ways. Now, to help me in this quest today, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Dale Lash, who is the Assistant Managing Editor at Lanyap. And if he can't help me deepen my knowledge and appreciation of Alabama in general and Fairhope Mobile area in particular, then I think there is no hope for me. Dale, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Dale, first of all, for anybody out there who doesn't know what Lanyap is, please tell us.
Yeah, we're a weekly newspaper. We have a weekly print product, and we have a website that's very active. It's basically a daily news organization website with a weekly print product here in Mobile, Alabama. Mobile and Baldwin County, basically, is our coverage area.
Right. And the Lagniappe has been around for a long time, I would assume.
21 years, I believe, this month. So it's been, it's been over two decades now.
So you have your finger on the pulse of what's going on Baldwin County and the sort of Mobile area, would you say?
Probably more than most people, absolutely.
So for a newbie like me, somebody who's never even actually visited Alabama, never mind Mobile, how would you sum up Mobile as distinct from Montgomery, Birmingham, other parts of Alabama?
Oh, it's the water, man. It's we're real close to the water. We've got one of the most diverse ecosystems in the country with the Mobile Tensaw River Delta. Just a beautiful place, just wildlife. If you like to get on a boat and have a good time. It's a wonderful place. Obviously, what also makes us different is we have just a ton of Catholics here, so that religion is very important down here, especially Catholicism, and that leads us to be a little bit probably have a little bit more fun than the other cities in Alabama as well, as far as enjoying the occasional drink and just having a good time, and of course I can't help but mention the Mardi Gras celebrations that are second to none here. Us in New Orleans are really the two main Mardi Gras attractions here in the United States, and we were actually the first carnival celebration in the U.S. because we were founded several years before the city of New Orleans was founded. So we've got that going for us as well.
No, absolutely, Dale. And I think that was one of the first things that was explained to me when I started working here at Archangel Radio, just how much you had stolen a march on New Orleans when it came to Mardi Gras. I'm guessing at the Lagniappe, I mean, the news cycle in any local area is one of courts and crimes and ups and downs and school boards and all local politics. I mean, you cover the whole spectrum, I guess, of life in all its rawness here in this part of Alabama.
Yeah, we obviously do the crime reporting and the local news reporting stuff, but we also at Lagniappe have a tradition of investigative reporting, and so you'll see stories of us. We don't just believe everything that we hear and write it verbatim. We try to really go in and investigate claims from those in power and see if they're accurate, see if they're true. It's something that we pride ourselves on. You won't see a lot of, I don't think you see a lot of that in locally focused journalism anymore, is where you have investigations, but we have the resources and the stick-to-it-ness to see some of those investigations through. So we really pride ourselves on that.
Yes, I would agree with you, Dale, in my work in journalism, that it really does come down to resources sometimes for those kind of investigative journalism efforts. But they're probably the most satisfying for a lot of journalists. In fact, I would say that a lot of the journalists I know, that's why they went into journalism.
I mean, that's why I did it. You kind of want to learn to ask the right questions, and you kind of really – You want to see yourself as like an advocate for the people, right? You want this whole idea of the fourth estate. It's true. You want to keep the government in check. You want to make sure that tax money is being spent appropriately, and you just want to be sort of the vehicle that lets people know what's going on in government. And I do think that the investigations are probably the most satisfying stories. I mean, we all have to write about weekly, daily meetings and stuff. That's just part of the job. But I think really when we get down to the most exciting stories that we've covered, it's going to be some sort of an investigation that we've done over the years.
Whereas a national paper or a national media organization can sort of swoop in and shine a light on corruption or such like,
right.
The Lanyap is very much embedded in the community. It's part of the local community, which creates a kind of even more, well, it's a slightly more difficult situation to be in, Dale. Is it?
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, we are locally owned and operated. We don't have, you know, we're not a big media conglomerate. So we don't have people like up in, you know, Birmingham or New York or somewhere else telling us what to write about or having us kind of meddling in, I think. But the negative impact of that is that we see the people that we investigate, the people that we maybe push back on a little bit, we see them out in public and many times they'll call us and they'll be upset about something and we'll have to, you know, we'll kind of have to talk them down a little bit. So, I mean, there's a give and take there. Yeah. Like we don't have any real corporate interest because we are a small locally owned newspaper. But at the same time, like if I go out to eat, I might see the subject of a story that I'm writing right there if I go to the grocery store. So it is a little bit, it can get a little awkward from the, you know, in, at times when that happens, but it's, you know, usually we're usually pretty good at communicating, so we can agree to disagree, get our point across, and remain pretty civil.
That's really interesting. You're listening to the voice of Dale Leash, who is the assistant managing editor at the Lanyap. Dale, it's fascinating just listening to that, because I can imagine, I mean, I'm thinking of all those old movies I saw about local reporters who are caught in the web of corruption locally, and if they say something, I mean, it sounds like a sort of what journalism used to be like, in a sense, which is totally lost with a lot of the national media, certainly this side of the Atlantic, where it's very bland and it's often just a press association or whatever. But this sounds like something which is very much reporting what is really going on, and has the highs of that, but also probably some of the lows.
That's correct. I mean, we run into people constantly that have been the subjects of our stories, and it's you deal with that. And at the same time, yes, we like to look at stuff like a hyper local level. We will do statewide news as well. But we really focus on Mobile and Baldwin County, and we really want to be embedded in those communities. We want to have sources in all of the communities of this two-county area. And so, yeah, you know, it helps to have been a good, solid news-gathering organization for 20 years. Everybody down here knows who we are now, you know, and so that helps. But, yeah, it's really, like I said, it's really not so much – I mean, we are really hands-on in the community. We're not going to be told what to do from on high.
Sure.
It's literally just us, and we're here locally. So we care about the community. We're here, and it's stuff like that.
Now, 21 years in existence, you have seen some major shifts in the media in terms of production, distribution, and how people consume news and news feeds, etc. I mean, I'm told that you're one of the last print newspapers in Alabama. Is that correct?
There's a lot of smaller print newspapers. Last time I heard, we were the largest weekly newspaper in Alabama. So we're definitely one of the larger print products in the state. And yeah, like the Press Register, which was a legacy newspaper down here for years, stopped printing this year. The Birmingham News stopped printing this year. The Huntsville Times, those are all in major cities. They all stopped printing this year they go to web only now. And to be honest with you, I started here in 2014 and we had a website, but it wasn't near to the level that it is now. Like we were mainly focused on print at that time, and we would put stuff from print on the web and occasionally do web stories. Now it's completely shifted. And so has the whole industry. Like we have a subscription base for the website now. We push breaking news. We push all of our news, to the website first for the most part, and then put, you know, some larger stories and stuff like that in print. But we're really focused on a daily basis of updating the website of getting stories out to the public as quick as possible and then letting them read them and then coming back and doing a print product once a week. So that's kind of the shift you've seen. You know, we're really going towards web-based. You can see that with the other papers, not printing, but we're still going to print and we're still here.
Well, I was just going to ask, I mean, is it sort of a matter of time before it all shifts online? I mean, the cost of producing a print edition these days is often the problem, and then the distribution of it and all the other
right.
allied costs. But, I mean, is there a kind of situation where you end up with two lanyaps, one which is media-driven and is online and is very quick and responsive and maybe shorter in its pieces, and then you have something a bit more thoughtful, which is a print edition, weekly, slightly longer, feature articles, more in depth.
Yeah, we're already there, and a lot of times, you know, we'll do, you know, if it's breaking news, we'll put a breaking news alert online, and then go back for a larger piece of the paper and kind of explain, like after a couple of days, because I mean everything can change with a breaking story in a couple of days, right? You can write about a police shooting, and then in about, you know, four or five, six days, all of the facts, or at least some of the facts have changed in that time frame. And so, you know, you kind of have to keep your head on a swivel, but we're already there. We're already, you know, we're putting the breaking stuff online and maybe explaining it, doing a little bit more in-depth piece, maybe an investigative piece related to the breaking news article in the paper. So we're already doing that. And I just expect that to continue. And like I said, we have no plans, as far as I know, to change the way we're operating to this point. So for as long as I know, you will continue to see a print lanyap. But yes, the overhead cost of print is obviously not, you know, what some media companies want it to be, and so going online and doing you know ads online with their website is the way some folks are moving. Absolutely.
Okay, well, listen, we're going to take a short break because we've got some bills to pay as well. Dale, are you okay to stick around for another segment?
Yeah, I'll stick around.
And if anybody has any questions for Dale, you can call us on 888-928-0881, or you can text me on 251-928-2111. I'd be only too happy to pose your questions. We're in conversation with Dale Leash, who is the Assistant Managing Editor at The Lanyap, and we'll be back straight after these words. Stay tuned to The Turley Frequency. To the Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm in conversation today with Dale Leash, who is the Assistant Managing Editor at The Lanyap. Dale, while we were on break, we had a number of questions come in here on text, one of which I really, really like. It says, how has the city changed in the last 20 years?
Oh, wow. That is a good question. I think if you look at development downtown has been one of the biggest changes we've seen. I think 20 so years ago, or even a little bit more, people weren't going downtown. You know, you had everything kind of move westward. You know, you had the malls, you had stuff like that. There wasn't a lot of retail downtown. The last 20 or so years, you've seen a major change in that. And that's not only in Mobile, that's really, This idea of recapturing downtown has been a national movement in that time. So I think that has been probably the biggest change. I mean, we're an old city, so 20 years is almost nothing as far as we're concerned. But yeah, as far as kind of a move downtown, probably this also, as far as the city government goes, this idea to provide family-friendly entertainment and making that the city's responsibility is probably another major change, which I appreciate. I have a 7-year-old daughter, so you know, if the Parks and Rec department is doing something, family friendly that we could go to, like, you know, flying kites in a park or something. That is something that I really appreciate, and I know that other parents do as well. So I think that those are probably the two biggest things. Sort of the way government has changed, the way local government has changed in its philosophy, and this sort of nationwide attention to recapturing what downtowns were like, you know, back in the day, I think are the two biggest things I've noticed change in the city.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I think this is something which is global at the moment. I mean, this sort of repopulation of large cities that were once emptying out from the 1960s onwards. Now it's quite fashionable to live downtown. But there's also sort of behind that, I guess, Dale, all sorts of other factors that are coming into play, which are around use of you know, cars and the climate and the way people want to live and the way people want to access their work and whether they're working at home or whatever. I mean, sometimes in your stories, which are maybe kind of very local, you can see trends which are national, if not global, right?
And that was one that we talked about. Another one is this idea, you know, this idea that you brought up cars. I think that there is a need and maybe even a want on not only the government level, but also on the local, like on the people level, on the citizen level, to find alternatives to having to drive everywhere. And so, you know, later this year, and to bring this back to a Lanyard story, later this year, they're bringing an Amtrak passenger train back to Mobile from, I think, around, they stopped doing it around Hurricane Katrina in 2005. So they're bringing back an Amtrak train that'll go to New Orleans. So we'll have a twice daily train to New Orleans, which we haven't had in 18 years. Wow. So that's another aspect of this. You know, you brought up the cars. I think it's a need for better public transportation options. And you're seeing that globally. You're seeing that nationally, and even a little bit less so in the state and in Mobile, but we have our aspects of it too.
Yeah, no, it's very much hotly debated this side for different reasons, because it's all very well, and we're all for cleaner air and better public transport and all the rest. But as you and I know, for the last 50, 60, maybe years, 70 years, certainly since the Second World War, there has been a move whereby everything has been devolved out so that it's car friendly. And then it's been shopping malls, drive-throughs, whatever you want to call them. So trying to turn that around quickly is more than – it's a difficult one, not just for Mobile, Alabama, but for everywhere. Got another question here for you, Dale, and it's rather general. Take your pick, whatever comes to your mind. It says, what are some of the biggest local stories in recent years?
Oh, that is an excellent question. Let me think about it. Local stories. Well, I will say a big story for Laniac last year was we looked into I'll tell you one thing that we have been fighting for here at Lanyap, all the way to the state Supreme Court even, is this idea that, you know, police are buying body cameras and they're putting them on officers' bodies here, and it's supposed to, you know, record interactions that police have with citizens here.
Sure.
The issue here in Alabama is that they're really, we've kind of left it up to the agencies to decide who gets to see that footage. And for instance, some sheriff's offices around here, Baldwin County Sheriff's Office in particular, in a case that we were following closely, refused to release body camera footage, used an ongoing investigation as an excuse, and would not release the body cam to us. And we thought it was important for people to see it, to see what happened and actually transpired. And this was an officer involved shooting in Baldwin County. And we ended up losing the case at the Alabama Supreme Court. But we have since, you know, kind of done a series of stories on that particular thing, and ended up getting the body camera footage through court as a court case, went through the process. But yeah, I think that is this bigger question of, why did we spend all this money, public money, on body cameras if the public isn't allowed to see them? That has been a big question the last couple of years for us here at Lanyap. So that's one of the bigger stories that we've, and we did actually the cover story last year looking at all of the different body camera policies from all of the agencies that we cover. And it's just fascinating because you'd think that the state would want to step up and have better laws allowing public to see these sorts of things, and they don't. And we're really hoping that they will. So that's probably one of the bigger stories we've had in the last couple of years in so far as it resulted in us having to go to court with the sheriff's office. Go ahead.
I was going to say it must have been sort of exciting in a way, though, as well, Dale, because the Lanyap is not just reporting the news in that instance. It's also kind of making the news, isn't it?
And that's funny. It's funny. We did, in that case, and I mean, our publisher was interviewed by other media outlets after the end of that case. And, you know, you don't, it's funny. It's an old adage in journalism that you don't want to make, you know, yourself the story. But in this case, it just happened because we were trying to, you know, kind of a greater good thing, I guess, do something for the people. And it made us the kind of the story, at least for at least one news cycle. But we're going to keep highlighting stuff like that here at Lanyap, and hopefully at some point the state will come along with us and say, yes, this needs to happen. This is what needs to happen. So hopefully that is the case.
Well, if that's the best, what, if I may ask, Dale, was maybe the weirdest story that you ever came across, something that Ooh. Even a world-weary journalist sort of scratched his head about?
That is an excellent question. I don't have anything off the top of my head from here. I'll tell you a story that made me very nervous as a reporter, and that was there was a standoff right outside Government Plaza last year here in Mobile. Government Plaza is where, you know, the court system and the city and county governments have offices.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. On Government Street, and there was a car parked out right in front, and the guy in the car had a gun, was threatening to I guess kill himself or something to that effect, and it caused a standoff with police, I was at the scene when you heard gunshots, and it was kind of surreal to be in that situation. I've also been in the middle of protests where cops have had to use tear gas, and that was a little bit nerve wracking too. So those are the two that come to mind as sort of making me feel uneasy as a reporter, but having to stand there and just deal with it. That's what I'll give you, because I can't think of anything too off the wall. I'll probably think of about five ideas when I get off.
The minute you go off. I have had a question through which does sound a bit weird. I'll throw it your way, Dale, because I'm not sure myself. Ask him if he has ever seen the leprechaun. I'm not sure what that's about.
there was an old news piece on a TV news station. We have an area of the town, a neighborhood called Crichton. And so there was a group of folks in Crichton who claimed to have seen a leprechaun in a tree. And so that has become just world famous Mobile, Alabama lore that there's this leprechaun. And there was an amateur sketch, a really poorly, on purpose, poorly drawn amateur sketch of this leprechaun. And so, you know, you'll see the logo and stuff on things. It's a great marketing ploy for folks here. So that's what it's in reference to, is the Crichton leprechaun. I still don't know. I can't tell you to this day if that was a legit news story or not. I think that it was, but I was in college at the time. I was going to University of Alabama, and so that kind of made me famous at the time, because it was I was from Baldwin County, but Mobile was the closest city, so people were always asking me about the leprechaun. And I'm like, you know, I wasn't here when it happened, so I can't tell you much about it. But since then, it's been great. Yeah, it's been just exploded.
So we haven't
but I've
had
never,
a script
I have,
for...
No, Sorry, I have not seen it, but the question was, had I seen it? I have not seen it.
So the headline tomorrow in the Lanyap will be, Dale, I have not seen the leprechaun. That will be the headline that comes out. Dale, we're talking about past events. We're talking about present events. But you, with your news, your journalistic nose, you will have a nose for the stories, the story trends that are coming up locally in the coming months and also years. And you'll probably see elements of those already beginning to form. What do you think in the next year or two do you think is going to start to predominate on the news pages of the Lanyap?
Oh, of Lanyap specifically. That is a good question. I think you're going to see – man, that's a good question. You're going to see, you asked specifically about Lanyap and we're kind of different. I think a national news trend is you're going to see this continued division between, you know, right and left politics, nationally. How that's going to play out locally is I think you're going to see more people enter local political races, more people with, I'll just say it, weirder political takes entering the race for various reasons. It's going to kind of be a microcosm of what you see nationally. You know, the more diverse the political opinion, rather than just the two party, I think one way, I think the opposite, you're going to see some folks with some nuance and even some folks with some more radical views become mainstream enough to you'll start seeing them in local races as you are already in national races. So I think that is going to be, just from a macro sense, I think that's what you're going to see here. For as far as local news goes, you're going to see a lot of changes in Mobile. We're going to have a new airport. We're going to have a new civic center. That's not nearly as interesting as sort of what's going to happen politically. But you know, that's in the coming years, you're going to see that sort of stuff happen here locally, but also sort of a microcosm of the national politics and the more radical views, probably the more diversified views, and people being even more separated than they were before.
That's a very interesting answer, Dale, and one hopefully we'll come back to at another time. We're about to finish the interview, unfortunately, but I have one last question that's just come in here. Can Dale recommend the best place to eat in Mobile?
Oh, wow. Well, if you want to spend a little bit more money, Osmond's on Halls Mill Road is probably the best, like, fine dining restaurant we have. Noja's also very good. If you're looking for just a good time, like a beer and a burger, you can't go wrong with Callahan's Irish Social Club here in Mobile in the Oakley neighborhood. So those are probably my two suggestions. If you want a lunch spot, Heroes is always great downtown. Roosters is good for Mexican food. I got a ton, but that's it. I'll leave it at that.
Excellent. Dale, tell people where they can find out about you and about your newspaper.
LanyapMobile.com is the website. You can go to the prompts to subscribe. Every subscription helps us continue to do what we do. We really appreciate it. We're on newsstands or in the purple boxes every Wednesday and Thursday. So just check us out there. We really appreciate it.
Dale, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I hope you'll come back again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Dale Leash, Assistant Managing Editor at the Lanyap. When we come back, we'll be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio.